This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Welcome to the My Old Man Said podcast. I'm David Michael, your host. Joining me to discuss a week of wonder in the Villaverse, Mr. Phil Shaw,
ooh,
Mr. Chris Bird. Welcome, welcome.
Hello, hello.
Hello. Mr. Phil Shaw came all the way from the Monaco of the UK to Villa Park for the Bournemouth game.
I did. I heard the call. The call was put out for everyone to support. This was the game.
Yeah. There's after saying, when I posed the question, will Watkins get to 20 goals, 20 league goals this season? And Phil Shaw said no a couple of weeks ago. He's sending us videos of standing near the tunnel and as the players were coming off before the game after, you know, the warm-up, saying, come on, Ollie, you can get 20 today.
Well, Ollie, 20 today.
Personal motivator, Mr. Shaw, welcome. How was your trip?
It was fine. It was, the way over was a breeze. Beautiful day on Sunday. Great result. Everything went smoothly. Today, coming home, security at Birmingham International, not great. 2 hours standing, just getting sweaty. Awful.
I mean, I go through Birmingham every month and I'm still waiting for them to finish rebuilding it. So a bit of a pain, especially now where Villa are continuing in Europe. They really need to fix their airport, because there's more and more fans going to be flying out to Athens in hopefully two dates.
Hopefully.
In May.
Well, it didn't do Nanny McPhee any harm. He just waltzed past me, his locks flowing as I was standing there, just giving him daggers.
Why has he skipped past you?
He's priority, of course. He's important.
Is he paying, he's paying the £5, or has he got an extra extra pass? I think
he just gets recognised. He is quite, because everyone goes, oh, there's that hairy guy.
I wouldn't say that's recognised, but yeah.
We might have to find out if there's another level of priority that you can access. If there's a special door, this is what we need to know.
Set piece security. If only we had that.
Set piece security. Set piece security services.
Yeah.
Right. So where do we start, people? Well, let's start with the sponsors. NordVPN. With NordVPN, you can switch your IP address to wherever you want to be in the world. So it also helps you access ways of watching those 3 o'clock Saturday games. They subscribe to other packages around the world by resetting your address. Also, the underlining thing is it protects your online browsing and safety. And NordVPN are giving My Old Man Said listeners a special deal, which, as well as big savings, you do get 4 months free as well, plus a 30-day money-back guarantee to try it out. One account can service 6 devices as well. So do check it out at nordvpn.com/MOMS. Moms. Right. Well, we've covered off the Arsenal one before, but that was the start of this week. I would argue that the Lille away game didn't really carry on from the Emirates, but the end result was. Although the end result really carried on from the World Cup final, didn't it? Because it was a bit of a sequel, France and versus the one man Argentinian.
Strangely, that finished 3-3 as well, of course.
Yeah, and we will focus more directly on the most recent game at Villa Park, the 3-1 win against the Cherries. First of all, though, let's have some Villa news. Aforementioned penalty win against Lille puts Villa into the Europa Conference League semi-finals to play Olympiacos to set up a further date in Athens, where they will meet the winner of Florentina versus Bruges. Who do you think we're going to get if we get past Olympiacos?
Hope Bruges.
Ooh.
I hope Bruges.
Phil?
But I don't care.
I would hope Bruges as well. Just something about a team that gets to a final one year and then gets to the second final, you don't tend to bet against them.
My thoughts exactly.
Like Aston Villa in the playoffs.
Yes.
We've seen it a few times, haven't we, to be fair?
They just make that final tweak. Right, let's not lose this time. And it all becomes good.
Is that what Although you, I do remember Valencia back in the day losing a couple of Champions League finals in the bench.
They did. Mm-hmm. In the days of Mendieta and all those boys.
So there is precedent.
They were a good side.
Yeah, I don't mind the idea of playing Fiorentina and then them losing again to a
English team.
The problem is that there's a little bit more pressure on Villa because you'd have West Ham fans again winding you up if we fail to beat them. But let's not count our chickens yet. It's Olympiacos first, and they are wild and predictable and capable of beating us. The fact that the final's in Athens, it's too much to resist, isn't it, for them? They get to trash a rival stadium.
True, yeah.
And have maximum fun. Unai Emery has accepted the one-year extension clause that was in his contract. Potential ejector seat clause, wasn't it, to get him out of a sticky situation? That's part of the reason that extension was out, and also it gave Villa an easy trigger if everything was going right. There will be discussions in the summer. I mean, the way this works is, as well as everything's rosy, one of the reasons why you do refresh contracts, which will be more the summer one rather than this one-year extension, is because of the likes of Bayern Munich, etc., rumours circling. Obviously, Emery's agent will be on the phone saying, well, you know, we've got landed you in the Champions League. We've got this interest. You know, they potentially might pay this amount of money. And you use it as leverage to get a better deal. I mean, Emery's in a great position, isn't he? He's got Villa by the balls, essentially, because life after Emery, I can't imagine it, can you?
Not right now. He's probably, if he goes on to achieve what we all hope he will this season, he's going to go down as a pretty iconic manager who stands at the pantheon of the best.
Yeah, and legacy is the key word here, which when you've got somebody really good, you want to build legacy. Villa haven't had legacy for a long time. I mean, we're clutching on the straws of like Martin O'Neill. Finishing
that wasn't run. That's not really legacy.
And that's failure in my book.
And in his book, if you hear him speak, he says that was a failure in his eyes.
Yeah, because the remit was Champions League qualification. So that was the bottom line there. And we've seen this season that it's very much a reality. And people will always say, oh, it's harder now than it was then. So if you're talking about, that's why people were getting excited about finishing seventh, sixth. But it's actually been proven that it is as it was then. It was a possibility. And Leicester, I mean, God bless Leicester, they proved so many theories wrong, that if you've got a team and it's the right time, you can achieve anything still in English football. So I'll remind you, when I first met the owners in that first meeting, when they summoned the fan consultation group at the time, and you know, I asked Wes Edens and Nassif, it was Wes that answered. And I said, why Aston Villa as opposed to Inter Miami, who they were linked with at the time? His first two words out of his mouth were Champions League. And we're on the cusp of that, people. Also, Villa have announced a US tour, which will take in Columbus, New York, Chicago. We will be playing Columbus Crew in Columbus, Red Bull Leipzig in New York, and the Mexican League champions, Club America, in Chicago.
Yep, before we fly to Dortmund, of course, to play over there.
Which is essentially they have their traditional season home opener, which we do, but we don't really make a big ceremony of it, do we? We normally just play a big European team, but we should you know, maybe
we haven't in recent years, of course, have we? We've tended to, well, we, you know, we had Lazio, was it last year, at the Bescot?
Yeah, which didn't really have much of a ring to it, does it?
It wasn't quite so. I mean, it was a lovely evening, but it wasn't the most sexy of evenings.
Yeah, Aston Villa have actually confirmed the Betano. Speaking of Greek betting company Betano shut. Sponsor, as previously mentioned. Now, at the time of announcement, when the club leaked it in the Telegraph, that's their leaking paper, they were making out that it was 20 million a year and this great job from Heck. I mean, it was Heck that actually leaked it, and he always tells them to mention himself via, obviously, the communication department at Villa. Now, the thing is, there's no way you do a sponsorship deal and set a price when you don't know if you're going to either be a Champions League club or not, because there's a hell of a lot of difference for the betting company and also for the club, because you're not going to get undercut if you're doing a deal and you end up in the Champions League and you've done a deal for less than that. And also, from a sponsor point of view, you're not going to pay Champions League prices for a club that's not in the Champions League. So I think that was the top whack, the 20 million, as we've said before.
Yeah.
So I think the reason why Villa are starting to do things now in terms of announce things is because they feel a bit emboldened now, 6 points above Spurs and looking likely to be in the Champions League. I wouldn't be surprised if at the end of this week they announce a rise in ticket prices as well, after swerving any kind of consultation or discussion with the fan groups on it. Brighton away trip has been confirmed for the 5th of May, Sunday, obviously because of the Olympiacos game. Opta have put out a table, the average time between games of Premier Leagues across all competitions in hours. Villa are actually third in the shortest time, 123 wow. hours, behind only Liverpool and Manchester City, the only two teams that have played more games than Villa's 50 this season. Then comes West Ham, who average three more hours than Villa, then Newcastle, then Arsenal, and you're looking in 19th place, the team only after Sheffield United have had the most time in between games is actually Spurs. So that is a massive advantage they've carried all the way through this. Now they're going to have to learn how to play with the shortened space between games, because now we have, even though Villa have got a semi-final over two legs, we have now, including that, got the same amount of games as Spurs. Spurs have got a couple of midweekers now. So we're pretty much level playing field in terms of strain of matches. So good luck to Spurs. See how they get on with that. Mm-hmm. We're battle tested. They're flabby, I think. They're not.
I mean, I saw after the weekend, I heard someone talking about the difference of West Ham and Villa in Europe, and Villa are averaging about 2 points on European game weeks. West Ham, their form's plummeted when they play in Europe.
Yeah, they've been shit after European games. They have, though, while we're on the subject, in terms of players used this season, Villa have used 33. West Ham have used 26 in terms of all the teams in Europe.
Small squad, that, for a lot of games.
Newcastle have used 32. Liverpool have used 35, where they've been putting out their under-12s, haven't they, in some games. Spurs have used 30. So, yeah, West Ham have slightly smaller squad, averaging 3.4 changes in between games. Villa are 3.1. Some people have said, oh, Villa have got a small squad this season. I don't agree, because the two big players that went out at the start, Buendia and Mings, we actually replaced them. If they didn't get injured, we wouldn't have got in Clement Longley or Zaniola. Also, Morgan Rogers coming in, straight in for Ramsey, essentially.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
We've always had the numbers, I feel, most of the time. Okay, Kamara is the only long-term that hasn't been replaced. Apart from that,
we've dealt with it incredibly, haven't we, really?
Yeah. We've got the most in-depth squad we've ever had, and in terms of quality, that we've ever had in our history. Yeah. So I don't buy in for that small squad, because you're talking about, you have to have a squad that manages, will be of a certain level that it's good, and that's going to cost money. So you can't have a big, fat squad and flabby squad with, you know, players that aren't playing on big wages. You've got to manage.
Chelsea.
Yeah, you've got to manage the wages, and you've got to make sure that every member of that squad is actually a contributor. And I think we've got the balance just right. Under-21s got thumped by Forest after beating Arsenal 5-3 away. So mixed fortunes there. Under-18s beaten 6-0 by Brighton. Don't quite understand why we're getting all these ex-West Brom youth players. We should be looking elsewhere, I think, if they're getting hammered. The ladies also got beat 3-0 by Chelsea. As we said, they're pretty much finishing seventh in that. Right, 3 points. Point number one, the FA Cup replays are to be scrapped from next season. This has kicked off a bit of a fuss for the EFL. They weren't very happy. They want the FA to reevaluate that situation. I've kind of given up on the domestic cups, so I'm not asking the FA to reevaluate their approach. Are you?
No, but the thing about the FA Cup is it still does have the ability to sort of hook the imagination, hook the attention, like that Coventry United game, because everybody was hooked to it just after the Villa game. You know, Coventry coming back from 3-0 down, going the penalties. I mean,
yeah, but they've really got to go for it. I mean, the Premier League and the Premier League clubs have to take it seriously.
Yeah.
The FA has to take it more seriously. And, you know, I've said in a previous podcast, they should go in for this, the people's competition or the supporters, lower prices and give it an angle, more the traditional supporters cup, and really lean into that. Don't start cutting away and undervaluing it. Managers and players just take a dump on it now. By doing that, they're taking a dump on supporters. That's, you know, again, they haven't really consulted supporters on this in any shape or form. And I used to love the cups, and that's just been stripped away. And I think a lot of supporters feel that as well. And you're right in saying, you know, what Coventry have done, the way they've dealt with Wolves as well as Manchester United. It's the place of fairy tales, but the soul has been sucked out of football. And that is a big, big problem.
And the fact that it won't be in terrestrial TV anymore, that's it gone, that's it dead.
Yeah, 100%. Point number two, Vitesse Arnhem, or should I say Chelsea's C team?
They're
D
the feeder
team,
club, aren't they?
B team.
Tax dodge. Oh, sorry.
The Dutch Association has deducted 18 points from them after an investigation by The Guardian and Bureau Investigative Journalism, the German equivalent to the ones that really rattled Manchester City. So at least there's some good football journalism out there. They've uncovered apparent financial ties between the club and Russian oligarch Roman Abramovich. Is that something to do with Vitesse signing 29 different players from Chelsea on loan? I mean, I could have told you that.
Yeah.
The KNVB, the Dutch Football Association, said the unprecedented scale of the penalty is due to the exceptional seriousness and extent of the violations. I mean, this is why Manchester City need to get relegated as well.
They do. Especially the next bit where it said Vitesse provided incorrect information that was important for a forensic investigation. So they've just confused it and sort of smoke and mirrors. So that's exactly what City have done.
It's fraud, isn't it?
Yeah, it's the old, what's the cliche thing? It's not the crime, it's the cover-up.
Yeah. Point number three, we don't need to talk about VAR really, but Forest they've had enough, haven't they, Forest?
Yeah.
I think their owner probably wrote that to the tweet, but they've attacked PGMOL. They reckon they had three penalties. I mean, is this subjective? I mean, I can't speak on this. I haven't seen the three penalty incidents. I saw Stan Collymore saying that they're all dives and they're not penalties, but you guys have a differing opinion on that.
Well, I have seen all three given, especially at the Etihad, but in other places, this is the thing, it's inconsistency. Yeah. One of them's a definite penalty, actually even goes through the back. The third one even goes completely through the back of the Forest player, definite penalty. First one, very similar to the one Duran got against Burnley, kicked in the foot, down he goes, no touching the ball, and then the handball one, well, we'll see it in every game, a header back across the box, and Ashley Young, arm out, arm in, is it given or is it not?
Mark Clattenburg has got involved there, paid referee expert. He's written a piece in the Daily Mail.
Yeah.
He describes him as a joke as well. So it was always going to get to a boiling point, and this certainly has lit a fire. I mean, the Premier League and the FA have released statements about this, and it will roll on. I mean, I still can't believe we're still here, and the human error and the clear application of VAR hasn't come to any conclusion yet. I mean, it's getting ridiculous. I mean, even in Spain, where they don't use goal line technology, it made a farce of the El Clasico, didn't it?
Yeah, Barca scored essentially a phantom goal. I think it was when they were 2-1 up as well, which we know would have had a huge bearing on the game. And obviously, Real won the game in the last minute with a Bellingham goal. And
he actually crossed the line, but yeah. VAR chucked it off.
Yeah, which is weird. I mean, obviously, the Forest thing's strange because Forest are accusing the official of being a Luton fan.
Yeah.
Which is strange because actually you would have thought, well, if it was a Luton fan, they would have wanted the game to be a draw.
That Luton thing, that clouded... They should have perhaps left that one go. Yeah.
They should have just stuck to the sheer incompetence of them and left it at
that.
Yeah.
On to the bigger issue of the day. Aston Villa versus AFC Bournemouth. Apparently you have to say AFC because there's another Bournemouth and they play in some like lower league setup. Going into this game, bit of a concern. Bournemouth are... They've had their purple patches this season and their points haul, is it since November, is like fifth best?
Yeah, they've been on a great run. And even recently they've won, is it five of the last six or something? Although they haven't really been playing anybody particularly decent. But they're more than capable of causing problems.
As they say, you can only beat what's put in front of them. And this time it was a battle-jaded Aston Villa team.
Yeah, good way of putting it.
Who had been to Lille 120 minutes penalties, although we made a case they didn't really break too much sweat, especially the first 90 minutes anyway, perhaps saving themselves in game.
No, it wasn't a basketball match, was it? It was very much a chess game. And
yeah, so I've got to admit, I mean, without going into the game, the way the game went, I thought if we were going to have a stronger half, it would be in the first half if we were tired from the trip.
And come out fast.
You've obviously had Louise playing, so... There's one or two players that are going to be, you know, relatively fresh. Because Rodgers didn't start, did he, in Lille?
Although he still played probably the best part of 90 minutes with the Zaniolo injury in the first half.
Yeah, good point. Bournemouth, not really with too much to play for. I think they're established in the middle of the table. Mm. It's not as if they're going that extra 10% to achieve anything at the end of the season. So that was probably, I mean, we looked at this as, if you're looking at the table, if you win this, because Spurs don't play until actually we play our two games, including Chelsea. But this is the winnable, real winnable one. If you had to pick the game most likely. If you're going to win one, draw the other, which I think might do the trick, then this was the one you were going to win. But it's Villa, and we know what happens. Nothing goes to... Well, there is a script, actually. It went to script, because the script would say, if it was a Villa script, that we went 1-0 down at some stage, and that did happen. Villa, it's... I don't know. We need a term for this. I think something like ponderous control.
Yeah. It's like the kind of control you should have when you're a couple of goals up, not whenever it's nil each.
Yeah, yeah.
I call it low intensity.
Mm.
Yeah, we need a snappier title, though. So anything beating ponderous control, a comatose control.
Sunday afternoon.
Yeah, we had a bit of a Sunday afternoon about it. That's
for sure.
It's a lovely
afternoon.
Oh, beautiful. Sun in the air, Tillerman stroking passes around.
Beautiful. It had an air of end of season about it, really.
Yeah, Phil Shaw wearing his handkerchief on his head to protect himself from the sun.
Nice pre-match Sunday roast. Ain't life grand?
Yeah, that's how it all felt. We did have a pre-match Sunday roast.
But we were in control, weren't we, really, from the first whistle? We just switched off. Well, no, obviously, I mean, the cash penalty is, you file that one under stonewall penalty, don't you? It's the most obvious decision the ref's ever going to get in the penalty area.
Yeah.
Although the DRB foul in the build-up was borderline, but I can see why he didn't give it.
Yeah,
it's yin and yang. It's yin and yang. I mean, if Cash did not rescue our butts in that Lille game, he would have got some pointed comments from the crowd. But they left him alone. They actually sang his song after the penalty. Solanke didn't piss around.
Great penalty. To be fair.
No, he did pretty well. I was impressed enough with Solanke. He is a threat. He's like Diet Watkins at the minute. He's just slightly less than
he's
him.
He's got tenacity about him, hasn't he?
He's a big lad. And I think you saw his movement. He was very, very clever how he approached the Villa's high line, where he would run across that. He was really arcing his runs, but quite pronounced.
Yeah.
So it was almost like Torres and Konsa in centre-back positions. You didn't quite know which one was going to pick him up. And there was one just after the penalty where I think he arched his run. He went clean through, didn't he? And Konsa's recovery tackle in that one was absolutely superb, because if he gets that wrong, that's a penalty and probably a red card.
Yeah, he's definitely added a bit of, let's say, strength to him. He's been on the weights, Solanke, because he can hold off centre-backs as well.
Yeah.
I did expect Carlos to play, considering he didn't start in Lille, and I thought he would be the man to take Solanke on. And
he was excellent, wasn't he, at Arsenal? I mean, geez, if Carlos can consider himself unlucky, it's after that performance at Arsenal, it's probably one of his best performance in a Villa shirt, wasn't it? I would have said.
Yeah, it was.
So that was the surprise. But 1-0 down, he didn't feel too much panic at that stage. No. But, you know, still Villa's final ball wasn't quite there. It was still a bit casual. But then it
clicked.
At the right time as well, because I didn't really fancy going into halftime at 1-0. No. That can start manifesting itself in different ways.
Yeah, but when the goal came, it's almost, dare I say, everything that's good about Villa at the moment. You know, Diaby tracked back, won the ball back on the edge of his penalty area. It comes to Bailey, looks up, whips it with the outside of his left foot, and Rodgers' run, who had a really good half already. I thought we'll probably come on to him in general, but Rodgers was superb throughout, drives at pace, chops back on the defender, sends him for a hot dog, as they say. And then the finish is just aplomb, isn't it? He just smashes it into the roof of the net. It's a great goal.
I think the keeper gets something to it, doesn't it? That's why it kind of quite goes up higher.
I think I did. Yeah. Well, I think it was enough of his face. But was it, I think it was after the Brentford game, Rodgers completely two-footed. You don't know which way he's going to go.
And he's so balanced for a big lad. And that's not like in a sort of like crouch. He's powerful because he's big, he's strong, but he's so mobile and athletic for someone who's, 6'3", 6'4". He's so difficult to stop when he starts going.
He's got a good way to pass as well.
Perfect. Yeah. You saw that throughout the game.
He grew under his body after the first couple of games, and we thought he was the wrong brain and the wrong body. Now he fits. He's matured under his body. Yeah.
It's good coaching.
Somebody who also has a great weight of pass who did it throughout the game was Bailey. I mean, especially from deep. He can pick a pass. It's those big.
He really can.
It's those big golem eyes from Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
You can see the long ball really well, inside, outside of foot.
He almost knows the pass that he would want in that position.
Yeah, because he played, was it Watkins in the second half?
Yeah.
Beautiful pass.
A crossfield pass, wasn't it? Right over the centre-back, who it's probably a good time to mention. Watkins gave the lad at centre-back for them an absolutely torrid afternoon, didn't he? It's very seldom, actually, you see Watkins sort of dominate physically.
He's aggressive. He was aggressive.
On the ground, and their defender allowed him to back in slightly, and he would let the ball bounce. And I think if you let the ball bounce against Watkins and the ball sticks, then you're in trouble because he can either turn you or he can play people in, which he did.
Yeah, well, this is the new Watkins. Ever since that Brentford game, when he came out with that speech after the game, this is like Watkins 2.0, and that's the difference. He's taken more responsibility himself. He's being greedier, but he hasn't. He's still getting the assists. It's just
I think his change in mindset is probably down to that Northern Irish guy that kind of hovers around the tunnel and gives him a pep talk.
Well, only 20 today.
They kind of have your shirt warm up sign.
Is that the same guy?
And then, of course, Watkins, you know, in the second half, Villa come out really well in the second half. They were slick in that second period. The goal that ultimately is the winner, the second one, is just, it's absolute picture book, isn't it? That'll get filed right at the top of Villa's best team goals.
Yeah.
Back to front. I think it's Torres, isn't it? Steps into midfield. Great ball into, I think it's Rodgers, isn't it? Who ends up with the ball. Releases Watkins. Again, checks back on the defender. And then the weight of pass, again, is absolutely inch perfect for Diaby. He doesn't have to break stride. And he's almost on the edge of the 6-yard box when he delivers the shot. You think, well, he can't miss from there. Passes it in the bottom corner. Absolutely brilliant goal.
Yeah.
And we never really looked back from that point. I felt fairly comfortable that once we got ahead, I thought we would manage the game, having seen how Bournemouth were approaching the game. Because every time they kind of overextended themselves just a little bit, you always felt that Villa could just murder them on the break. And it was actually really nice to see us with the players we had on the pitch, with Watkins, Diaby, Bailey, and then Rodgers. Villa are just devastating on the break with those players. It's almost stupid allowing them to let them play like that.
I mean, a lot of it is just the deep ball that we can play. Tielemans, Bailey when he was back, McGinn as well. They're all really capable of, you know, precise unlocking. You know, pass it. Well, it didn't even have to be diagonal, but
through the lines. Was Lille, of course.
Literally drop over the shoulder of the forward as well.
Yeah, we were dropping it in. I mean, Rodgers had a couple in the first half where he played with his back to goal and just spun. Watkins did it a couple of times as well. That's kind of where the third goal came from as well, where it was a ball into Watkins. I think he releases Diaby. Diaby slips him in. Watkins rounds the keeper. Unfortunately, doesn't get his shot quite right. Bailey can't miss. And Watkins just thinks, how the fuck have I not scored from there?
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Yeah.
And at 3-1, of course, it's game over.
At 3-1, that's when Villa started to... Certain selfishness came in. Watkins suddenly decided, I need to score here.
I need to get to 20 today.
And yeah, that cost us, because he could have laid it off. He had a great opportunity where he decided to just go goal. I don't think if it was 2-1, if it was 1-1, I don't think he would have gone the way he went. I think he'd thought, well, if I miss, I miss.
And Dini had one, didn't he, as well, where he should have, he had probably the choice of three passes and didn't
too
pass
many
to
options.
Anyone. It's a great break. There was probably three occasions where Villa could have filled their boots a little bit. And to be fair to them, actually, Bournemouth, they gave it a go, didn't they, at 3-1. There was a really good save from Martinez at the back post, and they kind of gave it a go. They're a very neat, tidy team. You can see why they cause lesser sides problems, and they can punch up a little bit. They've taken 4 points off Man United, which we failed to do.
Yeah.
It's just a little bit funny,
isn't it, football? It's a funny old game. It's a funny old game. Where one team can't get a point off a team because they just throw the games away, and then they can easily beat a team that does get 4 points off them.
Yeah, but it was, at full time, it's a really, really good win. It's kind of like the perfect, quote-unquote, professional performance, a great way to come off a European game, 120 minutes. And the big thing, I suppose, was that win after Arsenal, it compounded. The compound effect of that means that it makes Arsenal get that win bigger. If you'd have drawn or lost, it's kind of a wasted win at the Emirates, whereas because you've won the next one, it's put yourself in a really strong position. You've put, quote-unquote, scoreboard pressure on Tottenham.
Yeah. Suddenly, Spurs will have more games to play than us, and that includes a semi-final for us.
And they've got to play the top three.
They've got to play Chelsea as well.
Away, which is difficult at the moment. And even they've got to play Burnley, and Burnley are coming out swinging at the moment.
Yeah, but I'm a generous guy. I give Spurs the Sheffield United and Burnley win, so that's 66 points. But then they're going to struggle to get points another win because just the mental effect of playing all these top teams. Three of the title race teams, and they're all pretty much will still be in the title by the time when they play Spurs.
Yeah.
So this is going to be a tall order for them. To sum off the Bournemouth game, I think pretty much from reading and looking at whatever Bournemouth fans are saying, they're saying they got outplayed eventually. Yeah. And there's a few complaints from them.
But just mentally, to go to Arsenal and win with that manner of performance gives them confidence because of that. To go to Lille and win in that manner, it's sort of two chalk and cheese outcomes. But actually, you've ended up with three very, very different games in 7 days, but you've got the result you wanted out of all of them. And I think they'll feel belief, and they'll feel like now they've got momentum. Whereas, of course, when we walked away from the ground against Brentford, you were like, oh, fucking hell. That's kind of like a real buzzkill game. Whereas actually they've responded to that, you'd say, perfectly.
Yeah. And it's almost like, it's not like you've won all three games and there's going to be a drop off at some point because the Lille game was as close to a loss as you possibly can get.
Yeah.
So you're feeling a different way. It's not as if like you're getting any complacency because it's, you're like, woo, you know, you're kind of wiping the sweat off your brow. So that focuses you. It's not as if you're going to get complacent at all, or you're not used to winning because that, you know how close you were to being ditched and you know, European out you go.
Yeah. And I think the fact that, you know, for weeks we've all been talking about coefficient FC, this and that, and I think now it's crystallized the goal. It's like, well, we know exactly what we've got to do. We don't have to look over our shoulder in the same way. I mean, we will be looking at Tottenham's results, but actually we've been looking after ourselves the last couple of weeks, and I think that's the way to go. You just put your pedal to the floor and sprint for home.
Yeah. Yeah.
Rather than kind of relying on, you know, for weeks we were looking at, oh, Man United this, Man United that. And now it's like, fuck this. The goal is clear. Let's just grab it now.
Yeah, no safety net.
I think that's
net.
The best way to be. Yeah, no safety net. Sometimes a good thing.
Yeah, it's like coming off the final bend. And instead of looking over your shoulder, you're looking at the finishing line instead. And
yeah, 100%.
Let's get to that. We should be all right now. I mean, you know, touch wood. But this week has set us up beautifully across all competitions, because the Lille, I had 30 quid on Lille to win the tournament. That was my backup plan, because the bookies made them favourites for that game. And you're thinking, how can you be the favourites for that game? And then the team that you're playing, that you're going to, according to the bookies, beat 11-8 for the tournament. Doesn't make any sense. And you're out, you know, Lille are at 10-1. And, you know, we've been saying it all the time on this podcast. We thought the two best teams left in the tournament were playing each other.
And they were. I mean, we gave them credit in our thing we recorded after the game. But over two legs, Lille were really, really good. We were very impressed with them.
So to get rid of them and beat Arsenal and then go through a tricky tie, because we haven't, I mean, you know, Chris just mentioned Brentford, very similar level of opponent there, perhaps better. A kind of game that you want to, if you play well, you win at home. But we haven't been playing well at home. And that was the distinguishing factor here, because now you feel a bit more confident for the remaining league games in beating a team like Arsenal and taking care of business when you're meant to be taking care of business against Bournemouth. So two thumbs up there. Key stat of the game.
Well, there's a couple of key stats come out in this one.
I said key stats.
It's the
singular.
It's the 20th win. Last week it was after the Arsenal game, it was the 19th, and now it's the 20th, which is...
You're working hard on your stats,
which is
you?
Most of the Premier League season. So
next week's key stat is going to be 21 wins. Yeah, is that what you're telling me?
Some people make a whole online account out of doing things like that. But Matt Meyer came out with a good one. He says, this is the best points total since 92-93 season, and there's still four matches to go. And he added to it, he didn't better, he goes, this, and it's worth pointing out that the 92-93 season was a 42 match season instead of 38, so it just shows how good they've done.
Yeah, well, this is the thing that's increasingly coming into focus, is this will be very much mirroring the Brian Little 95-96 season, when we came fourth and won a trophy. But I don't know how many wins we got there, but we're way above that already.
Yeah.
Fantasy Premier League player of the game.
It was Leon Bailey with lucky 13 points.
Yeah, I'm glad they played Bailey and Diaby, because there's been a few games recently where you thought, hey, recently it was working, and then they kind of iced it for a few games.
Yeah, but he's been carrying it off, hasn't he?
Yeah. You may have noticed that his leg was strapped up.
Yeah, I think McGinn had said, hadn't he, after Lille, that they weren't even expecting Bailey to travel.
Yeah.
So the fact that he's kind of turned up, put in a performance in both, obviously, you know, unfortunately missed his penalty, but made a bit of a difference, I thought, when he came on in Lille, and then was very effective again against Bournemouth when he got his chance.
You may have noticed in the upper dug above the away fans, there was a group of villains with flags, etc., bringing a bit of noise. You heard them certainly in the first half.
Yeah.
I mean, this is from the Holt. So you might have heard them a bit more, Phil.
Yeah, they were directly opposite me, and you know, they tried their best. It was good to see. I mean, visually it was good to see the flags and the sign up there as well. But the thing I would say is putting them above the away fans, even if the away fans bring like 2,000 and you've got like 100 villains trying their best, that's the wrong place to put them, because every time they tried...
Well, no, let me stop you there. It's the only place you could put them on the day. I mean,
yeah.
you've essentially got an empty stand there. You can't suddenly put 100, 200 people together because there's loads of season ticket holders, and to shuffle them around is something you can potentially consider at the end of the season when people are renewing, but you know, you've got to persuade people to move, and sometimes they need bribes and things to do that. But here there's an opportunity because there's three or four, maybe is there three, would you say three teams that do not bring both decks worth of fans. There's just the upper tier is all, I think it's Fulham, maybe
Fulham, Brentford, Bournemouth traditionally.
Yeah, maybe there's another
Brighton, maybe not.
But you can say to these guys, right, and I'm, this is something I'm going to bring up in the fan advisory board, is like, can we lock down this as a potential thing to do next season? They know the clubs that obviously don't take the full allocation. But I noticed that half of that upper tier was sitting down at rail seats. You know, it's safe standing. It's rail seats is the name of it. Now, we didn't campaign for 15, 20 years for safe standing, for people to sit down in safe standing.
And lean on them.
And lean on them and fall asleep. So this is something like, if you can get the 1897 group, if they get something started properly and it continues and like a snowball gets bigger and bigger, then people getting tickets there should be told to join in, and or it should be highlighted that these are the three games. So if you want a bit of a different experience, maybe even offer a season ticket for the a three game, you know, pass match mm-hmm. pack for those games to bring the noise.
And you've got to engage with this stuff, haven't you? You know, you think about Liverpool's a massive game, Olympiacos is, and they are all huge. Anything you can do to help the team, like welcoming the team before the game and all that stuff, every little helps.
Yeah, but in just in the respect of this group, it's hard to get sections to put people together in the modern day. You know, back in the terraces, you just all gather. It's even like if you wanted to bring your family, you just, you know, you all stand together. But in this case, if you've got that opportunity of having three games where there is actually a section you can use, there is a couple of sections around Villa Park that
you got R1, they're selling that again, aren't they?
The scope for doing stuff, but that's, you know, it's a great start and it's better than nothing. And you know, as time builds, more people get involved, it gets bigger, and you know, it spreads in other areas. But you know, there's also a certain element of this is not pandering to the club and doing whatever the club tells you to do. It's to force the conversation and force the ideas and say we want to do this and, you know, push it on. But as long as there's trust builds and it's a positive direction, then the club will realize that it's in their best interests and come round to it. But anyway, at least it started, and the important thing is you can also hear it as well, especially in the first half, because they have to ultimately influence the game. That's the whole point here. It's no use waving a couple of flags before the team come out 5 minutes before and then taking lots of pictures for social media and getting lots of likes on social media. Doesn't affect the game at all. And that's where some people get swept up in. This atmosphere, malarkey, is not about social media. It's about in the 90 minutes.
And we saw that in Lille. We saw it when we went to Ajax and Warsaw.
And we, you know, we should get to a point where if in those, let's say those three games in that section above the away fans, where you should be able to wave flags all game, because the reason that isn't part of what you can do currently is because people cry and complain that the view's being blocked. And but if everybody's in unison in that block and they all agree, right, we're all in it together, we're a group, then they'll be able to wave flags in it. And, you know, that'll be better because then you've got it going throughout the whole game. So hopefully we will see positive evolution of that. Anything else from the game or in general, life in general? Feeling good?
Yeah.
I'm feeling really cautiously optimistic, actually, after the last week. I think I remember walking out of that Brentford game, and even to a strange extent, the first leg of the Lille match, I was a little bit kind of, I think we said at the time, it was something like, you know, you believe in the team, you don't quite trust them. I'm starting to get the trust back, and I feel kind of, we can do this now. We've kind of got the minerals.
Let me say, there's certain myths, there's excuses. I mean, you know, obviously this is a game of opinions, but one thing I don't like is when you're going for something and people start to get cold feet. It's like, right, you know, we're going for Champions League. We've been going, well, from the My Old Man Said point of view, we've been going through Champions League since we were like third place, you know, around Christmas. And you've already done a calendar year where you are the second best team. Yeah, second best team in the league after the treble winners. So you're thinking, well, we actually can carry this over 38 games. It's proof. It's been proven.
We're a bona fide good team at this point.
So, hell yeah, we're carrying it on. And as soon as you started hearing things like when, you know, you drew against Brentford and straight away, without any hesitation, oh, you know, if we finish sixth now, it's a great season. You know, we've got to be so thankful, blah, blah, blah. And, oh, it's a miracle. Next season's going to be great.
Even this game, if this game had ended up with a draw, I could already see it. Oh, we got our win against Arsenal. So if you'd have taken 4 points from these two games already, I mean, that's just,
yeah,
you don't win anything with that attitude.
Just before the Lille second leg, you know, on the day, you're seeing, oh, well, you know, even if it ends here, we've got to a quarter final in Europe. And it's like, there's certain people in life and you realize they don't really achieve things because they wimp out when the going gets tough. And there's a reason why there's a saying, when the going gets tough, the tough get going. And Villa got going.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Because Emery has won 4 Europa League titles. Europa League's a fucking pain in the ass to win. That's why most people don't bother winning them. It's easier just to, like, fuck that. He's managed to get through. I mean, winning a league is tough, obviously, but there's only a few teams that are actually financially set up to do that. Funny enough, when you look at Villa's results now, and you look at that, United dropped 6 points. No, not even that. Not even that. I'll retrace that and say the two being 2-0 up against United at Old Trafford, being 2-0 up against Brentford and not winning those. If you add 5 points or 6 points to Villa's total now, we're still in the title race.
Yeah.
Sheffield United, I didn't fancy that one at all. I just thought it's just natural that
you're going to drop off.
You get complacent. You're thinking that 3 points are in the bag already. But I'm just saying, I'm going hard facts here. I'm going 2-0 leads. I'm sticking to hard games that you should have won. When you're a good team, you should be closing out those games. We'd be in a title race now. We're still a good, you know, we're a very good team.
Yeah.
So we shouldn't be shirking challenges as we stand now. It's got to be fourth, and it's got to be that Europa Conference League trophy.
Yeah, just embrace it. Embrace the expectation. Yeah.
Yeah, it's okay to fail if you've really tried, but if you're going to wimp out before the challenge, give up before you start, then you're creating you're creating a comfort blanket for your emotions, really, aren't you?
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like the opposite of what the players and the manager have said. You know, even Emery's talking about top four now in the last week, and it's this sort of thing of a no excuses culture. Don't have the excuse of, well, we didn't expect it, so it doesn't matter. It's like,
yeah,
you can tell those players expect it. I mean, fucking hell, Martinez has been talking about it since about November.
Yeah, McGinn's saying, well, you know, some players have played in it already, but I haven't, and I want to be there, and I'm telling the ones that already have not to get complacent about it.
Yeah, too right.
Villa were a team. They've won, and I can use the plural, they've won trophies in the 70s, they won trophies in the 80s, they won trophies in the 90s, and then it didn't happen. And I'm not counting the Intertoto Cups. So there's a generation of fans. If you're in your 20s or you're a teenager, I don't think you're sitting around going, oh, well, it's been a good season. If we stopped it now, I'd have bitten your hand off. They want to see us lift that Europa Conference League more than most people.
They want a moment.
And I don't want to, like, live in the past and think, well, you know, I've seen them win this, that, you know, X, Y, Z, I've seen it all. Fuck that. I want to see it again. And the good thing about the Europa Conference League is I haven't seen us lift that because only two other teams have.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the best way to embrace your history is to keep making it.
Yeah. And also, if you want to do something next season, you got a fuck more chance of doing it if you've got the mentality of winning in your DNA. You've started to grow it, embed it, intertwine it in your DNA. You're actually winners. You don't become a winner by coming up short and then thinking, oh, next season's going to be better.
Yeah, because the players are starting to believe again. You can see that. I mean,
yeah, they do.
They didn't believe in the Spurs game. I think the second half of the Spurs game, they didn't really believe it. You know, just everything went wrong that day. Brentford was starting to kill them off, and that's why that Watkins speech after the match was needed at the right time. That was like a lever pulled, right? Break glass in case of emergency, turn into bastard Watkins to get this over the line.
Yeah, I like it.
Believe is the word, and if you want to join our merry band of believers who support the show, the My Old Man Said members, and get access to Match Club, where we join up, and we've got some pretty exciting games to come there for mainly the away games, and get access to extra shows and ad-free shows as the football gods intended this podcast to be, then please do go to myoldmansaid.com to check out more details and to sign up. Special thanks, actually, almost forgot, to John Horsfield for signing up as a My Old Man Said member a couple of days ago. Thank you very much, John. Right, please do follow the show on Spotify, Apple, or whatever podcast app that you listen to, and follow us on social media, Instagram, Facebook, X, on at My Old Man Said. Right, before we go off into the night, let's have a quick Media Muppets. Right, Phils, what's in the trough?
Well, because the FA Cup semi-finals were on terrestrial TV, I'm going to pick on the BBC pundits, because they were exposed to more eyes than they would normally be exposed to, so more of their faults got picked out. The first one up in the queue was Jermaine Genus, who gave Kevin De Bruyne a man of the match for the semi-final Man City against Chelsea, and his reasoning for giving them man of the match, he said, "I've never seen De Bruyne pin in as many tackles as he has today." Then, of course, everybody that knows what to do is, "Oh, how many tackles did De Bruyne put in?" One tackle.
Wait, no, normally doesn't tackle anybody.
That midfield general, Kevin De Bruyne.
Yes, that's the one.
Well, having watched Match of the Day 2, I'm still trying to work out who the scorer of Villa's second goal is, because I've never heard of Mohamed Diaby.
The license pairs fees well used. Secondly, BBC Sports chief writer Simon Stone, he just can't let go completely. He can't kill off United's chances of fourth place. He put in his piece.
It's over.
I know it's definitely over for fourth, and they're not even getting fifth. With a place in next season's Champions League more or less beyond them, now that they are 16 points behind fourth placed Aston Villa. I mean, could you just say it's done? It is done. Even I'll say it's done. It's not tempting fate at all.
They're lucky to even be in an FA Cup final.
They're really lucky to be in an FA Cup final. But we're back to this, and it's going to carry on until Southgate actually announces his squad. Who's going to the Euros as Harry Kane's understudy? Glenn Murray, that ex-Brighton, Crystal Palace.
Legend.
Well, goal hanger, I would say. Well, he wasn't bad. He put his two cents in and said, despite looking at the stats of Watkins and Solanke, that he'd take Ivan Toney. He started off saying, you can't argue with the numbers. He says, but I'm taking Toney for his coolness and his spot. And then the BBC put up the numbers, and this was prior to the Villa-Bournemouth game, and they're surprising. I mean, Watkins and Solanke, shot conversion rates 20%, Solanke 18%, Ivan Toney 10%. And it's not that Toney's been off for 6 months of the season because of his gambling ban. He's actually played 13 games now, so you have a body of work.
And yeah, but he's still only scored 4 goals this season. The only way Toney should be in the squad, having so much time out and doing fuck all this season, is if he was like some kind of Wayne Rooney, David Beckham, and he was coming back. And, you know, they always shoehorn them in the squad, don't they?
They do.
Because it's, they're almost like talismans. We've seen it with Beckham and Wayne Rooney trying to rush them back. I mean, not Toney, who's hardly played. And by the way, is a wrong'un for what he's done. And he's only scored 4 bloody goals this season.
Yeah, I don't understand the sort of the media hype to get Toney, to rehabilitate Toney, unless they're priming him for a move to one of their
favourite teams. Yeah, it's strange how you can fuck up so badly and then everybody's licking your ball sack to get you in the England squad. I mean, it's like the Grealish thing. He missed a third of the season, and I've never seen such a big campaign for a player to play for England who hasn't played for like months. And it's the same again. It's the grass is always greener on the other side, isn't it?
It is. I mean, but if it's coolness in the spot they're looking for, well, our Watkins and Solanke this week both scored penalties. So what's everybody's reason for Toney going next week?
Yeah, I mean, I had my doubts about Watkins as an England striker. You know, if you're in the semis, in the final, would you rely on him? I would say, I don't know. But the last couple of games where he's shown more of an aggressive kind of spirit and
really suits him,
a strength, this is what he was missing from his game that kept him from being a complete striker. And what you saw in the last few games, you're thinking, yeah, he could play for England, no problem. I mean, I don't lose any sleep thinking about who should be Harry Kane's understudy at all, but I would definitely have Watkins in the England squad 100%, because you can play him with Kane as well. I think it's, well, it's, you know, there needs to be engagement, there needs to be likes, clicks, debate to fill endless hours of bullshit media. So that's why there is the debate in the first place. But somebody who scored 4 goals, who's been banned for gambling, who isn't a top tier player with what's the credit in the bank.
No, he's not even like, remember, like, you know, Vassell and Peter Crouch, who actually had like bodies of work for England whenever they played, they scored. It kind of, they might not have been great for their clubs, but when they put on the 3 lines, they actually did a bit of a job, and you thought, all right, you chuck him in the squad.
Yeah. So he has no divine right. You know, I'm not going against Tony, even though he did do a Zulu sign in front of the hole. Not against him. It's just based on the principles of this is not a regular, and somebody who's missed a big chunk of the season, and everybody seems to have forgotten that and forgotten the fact he's only scored 4 goals this season. And minutes per goal is 272 minutes, while Watkins is 147. So I don't get the debate beyond needing to fill minutes, column inches, and getting clicks, etc.
Yeah.
Right, enough of you, Mr. Muppet Man. What are you looking forward to the most? Chelsea, Olympiacos, or Liverpool?
Liverpool. But Chelsea's big.
I'm going Olympiacos all the way.
I mean, they're going to bring the heat, aren't they? I mean, literally, they'll bring a shitload of fireworks, but...
I think as long as we get a point from those two games, I think we'll probably get more, but I think Spurs are in the Shizen, and...
I hope so.
Olympiacos at home is the game that will determine, because that's going to be no picnic in Athens, so that's where I'm going for. We're almost giving ourselves a bit of breathing space in the league. That's what's good about this situation.
I would love it done early in the
Agreed.
League.
Listen, guys, in a 2-horse race against Leicester, when the prize on the line and the whole media was behind them, when the prize was the Premier League title, finally, the whole media was behind them. They couldn't see anything else but a Spurs win. They came third. This is a race against a team that's 6 points beyond them. They've got 3 games against the 3 title contenders, and the only prize is 4th. So I didn't expect them to be at the party, do you?
They've shown they're flaky.
Multiple times.
On that note.
Until Spurs grow a new set, it's goodbye from me, and it's goodbye from them.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.